This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the March 13th edition of Wednesday with Walton and Newberry, coming to you from thecardinalnation.com and also simulcast each week via the Scoop Sports Network and your favorite podcast apps. Welcome, Blake.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
So today we're going to cover prospect rankings, a little bit about what the industry sees in terms of the Cardinals' top prospects, as well as where they see the system in comparison to the rest of the division and the 30 major league teams. We'll talk a little bit about minor league spring training camp, which is now underway and games are going to be starting actually tomorrow on Thursday. And we'll talk a little bit about some of the numbers involved and people moving back and forth. And then we'll finish with a section where Blake will talk a little bit about some of the players that have opened his eyes in camp. We're, you know, roughly halfway through major league camp. And so there are going to be some roster decisions coming pretty soon. And as in the case of all of everything we talk about, there'll be more details and articles at the Cardinal Nation, as well as in our 282-page prospect guide, which is available on the site. And I encourage everybody to stop and look and read what's in it. I won't go through the whole table of contents here, but there's a wealth of information about history as well as current Cardinals prospects. And you can see on the site also testimonials from many, many, many dozens of satisfied users of it. So let's get started. You'll see at the Cardinal Nation an article where I've looked at the top 10 prospects from other systems. As Baseball America, Baseball Prospectus, ESPN, The Athletic, MLB Pipeline, and others have ranked the Cardinals' top 10 prospects. And as one would expect, it's pretty consistent at the top with Mason Winn, everybody's number one. Interestingly enough, Mason Winn is only going to be a prospect until opening day of the season. As soon as he gets one more day of Major League service time, he will no longer be a prospect. And then next up are Tink Hentz, Victor Scott, and Tekoa Robey, kind of in different order, different sequence. Followed by Thomas Sagesi, who's getting a lot of attention this spring, and the outfielder Chase Davis. So those six players are on every national top 10 Cardinals list. And again, in slightly different orders, but none of them are below number seven. Any thoughts about those names, Blake, and you know, who you feel, is there any tiering or any groupings within that top six?
Yeah, I think, well, first off, I think it's pretty clear that those six are somewhere, wherever you want to put them in the top 10, they deserve to be there. Very talented names. I think the pitchers in my mind are probably a little bit higher than the hitters. After once you get past Mason Winn, like I view Tink Hentz, Tekoa Robey kind of in a similar tier, and then maybe like half a step down below that is like Sagesi and Victor Scott, also in a similar tier. And with those two, it's very much Scott being driven, his value being driven defensively. The bat, I believe, more in with Sagesi, and the utility profile is nice. Scott maybe won't hit the ball as hard, but an elite defensive center fielder honestly doesn't even need to be that good of a hitter to even be a valuable player. So I think those two are deservingly maybe in a tier just a little bit below pitchers and Robey and Hentz, who I consider to have top of the potential or top of the rotation potential. Not necessarily that they will get there, but they could get there.
Other guys that are in the you know, the top 10s pretty much in agreement, Gordon Graceffo, Cooper Jerpy. So, you know, those guys also probably the next tier down, but certainly Graceffo's in a position he could help out at the major league level this year. A couple of the differences. Davis is a guy who's not in our top 10 yet. I think Blake's individual ranking here at the Cardinal Nation had him 10th. I ranked him further out, like 16. And we talked before in an earlier session about Chase Davis and his success in college, especially in the wood bat environment, but it hasn't yet translated. But, you know, he's only played only a couple months of professional ball, so we'll see how that goes. But another guy that the national guys were a little higher on than we were is outfielder Wonbin Cho, the Korean who played at Palm Beach last year. What's your take on Cho, Blake?
So I actually really love Cho as a prospect. I also really love watching Cho play. There's just a certain level of like smoothness and athleticism that just comes through in everything he does, whether it's the bat flips, the way that he runs the bases, the way that he runs in the outfield. I do think there's a chance he could stick in center field. He's probably going to get pushed to right field where his arm is strong enough to carry him there. I think It's totally fair, but with the package of skills that he has to put him in the top 10. I held off putting him in the top 10 simply because, one, he's super young, has not reached a level above Palm Beach yet. And guys like that, you know, they show promise and sometimes they don't deliver on the promise. Sometimes they do. I want to see him have that success at a higher level than he already has before I bump him into the top 10. And one of my biggest concerns with Cho is his, or where his batted balls are going. He tends to hit a lot of them on the ground, which limits the actual raw power that he possesses. I think he could be a guy who hits a lot of home runs if he can actually elevate the ball consistently. And that's not something he's shown yet. And while that's something that can come with age, it's not something that always comes with age. Because asking the player to hit the ball in the air more, sometimes, in most cases, does lead to some sort of a swing tweak. It can lead to different pitch selections, where sometimes guys hit low balls into the ground, and then they, if they just stop swinging at low pitches, they can start elevating more. I don't think that's the case with Cho. I think he just has a more natural ground ball inclination in his swing. So I think that'll take some work for him to actually tap into that raw power and show it in game. So until he does that, I think that limits his power to a little bit. And that's why he's off the top 10 for me. Now, he could come out this year and just start hitting ball in the air, demolishing the ball, moving to the top 10. Certainly justified. He has a really nice blend of skills, and it wouldn't shock me to see him do that.
And, you know, a year ago, we were probably having a very similar discussion about his teammate, Joshua Baez. Again, outfielder, a lot of potential, a lot of power potential, but the contact hasn't necessarily been there. And he's kind of dropped down in the rankings for a while unless he can prove that he's can hit at a higher level.
Yeah, 100%. I'm a lot more upbeat on Cho's chances than Baez's, probably, moving forward.
Another guy in the consolidated top 10, as well as in our top 10, catcher Leonardo Bernal, also at Palm Beach last year. But on our list, the pitcher of the year in the Cardinals system last year, Max Ragic, is a guy that we placed at number 10. He didn't make the top 10 national list. What's your take on Max, and why do we think he should be ranked higher than everybody else sees him?
Yeah, I think Ragic probably in some of the national rankings has fallen behind a little bit because the fastball is just kind of so-so. It's got middling shape, middling velocity. There's nothing really special about him. You don't watch him. When you watch him, he doesn't just blow you away with pure stuff. He's not hitting the upper 90s, even the mid 90s with consistency last year, although he started to do that in spring training, which is exciting. But it's really just an overall blend of four quality pitches, good command, and none of the pitches are, you could maybe say the fastball is below average. With the increased velocity shown in spring training, if he can command that, I think it could easily settle in. It's about an average pitch, but he brings that big 12-6 breaking ball, which he throws hard enough to actually miss bats. He has a nice changeup and a good slider, which he's added sweep to this year, at least so far in spring training. So again, we'll see if that carries over. But it's rare to see a guy who throws two good breaking balls and also can pronate and get a good changeup. And then pairing that with a fastball that's good enough, like he's a guy who can mix pitches, hit spots. I feel pretty comfortable about him moving forward, adapting to challenges at higher levels and settling into something like a back-end kind of starter role who can maybe push into that mid-rotation job with consistency if things break right.
And Max Ragic is in Major League camp. You know, maybe you'll be able to see him on another telecast up ahead. He probably, you know, won't be in camp too much longer, but, you know, he's had the opportunity to be in the big league camp. Speaking of guys being sent down to minor league camp, that's something that's happened and will continue to happen. The Cardinals have had two cuts so far that took major league camp down from 68 originally down to 56. And of course they have to get to 26 on opening day, plus however many are on the injured list. So there's another roughly 30 players that are going to get added to minor league camp, which right now is 127 players. Now, if you look at the opening day roster sizes for AAA, AA, 28 players each, and then for the Class A teams at 30 players each, you can see there's 116 jobs that this roughly 150 players will be competing for. So minor league games, as I said, start on the 14th, and they'll be going through the 31st. And the good news about the minor league games that are typically played at 1 o'clock on the backfields at Roger Dean is that there are going to be games every day, 7 days a week for that two-plus week period. Some days, the AAA and AA team will be playing in Jupiter, and on those days, the Class A teams will be playing away. And then the next day and other days, it might be the other way around. So you have to take a look at the schedule and figure out if you're trying to see a particular level. But part of the challenge in spring training is the rosters aren't written in ink. They're not even written in dark pencil, because every time players get sent down from the big league squad, that means other players ratchet down as well, because you don't need three first basemen in Memphis. So, you know, when a first baseman comes out, say when a Luke and Baker gets sent down, then probably a first baseman that had been working with Memphis is now going to work with Springfield, et cetera, et cetera. So the minor league rosters during spring camp are very, very fluid, and you can't really read too much from them. But I'll be down there next week, and now that the games are getting underway, and I'll be reporting then. All right, so we're going to close with a section where Blake can kind of riff on some of the players that have opened his eyes in camp. Let's start off with a favorite of yours, reliever Riley O'Brien.
Yes, Riley O'Brien is the guy. In case you guys didn't follow along at the Cardinal Nation Prospect Countdown, I did not have him listed in my top 50, but I did have him listed as kind of my sleeper pick for the year. The guy who's kind of off the top 50, but could actually have an outsized impact on the major league roster. And it's hard to consider, I think he's 29 now, a 29-year-old reliever with no or limited big league action a prospect. But what Riley O'Brien has done is in the last 2 years, he has completely turned around pretty much his career, his arsenal entirely. He went to driveline and developed a slider. So he previously was mostly a sinker sweeper kind of guy. Sweeper actually gets classified as a curveball with StatCast data, but it's a sweeper. Movement-wise, it's a sweeper. He added that slider to kind of be more of a bridge pitch for him because his sinker gets a lot of arm side run. I think it's about 15 inches, and the sweeper can push 20, which means that's diverging by about 35 inches on the way to the plate. And generally when that happens, those pitches have to start diverging earlier on their path to the plate, which means it can be easier for hitters to pick up on which pitch is coming earlier. So he looked to add that slider to kind of have the difference, be more of a gyro pitch for him, sits around 0 to 4 horizontal break, so that it's something that kind of ties the two together. So instead of there being a 30 to 35 inch difference, now you're looking at about 15 from the slider, and that way just tunnels everything a little bit better. So he added that, and that really led to a breakout last year. He missed a ton of bats. Granted, there's control issues. There's a reason the Cardinals were able to get him for basically nothing like they did. But then this past offseason, he went back to driveline, added velocity to his sinker. He's shown it in spring training. He's been up to 99. It's up. I think he was about 94.5 on average last year. So he's up a few ticks on average already. So I think there's a chance that sweeper can really carry him. And that the sinker that can sit in the mid to upper 90s with 15, 16, 17 or more inches of arm side run can be a really effective combo. The question is just whether or not he can actually throw strikes. And he's done a good job of that for the most part so far this year in spring training. So I think he's a guy with the stuff that can really play in a major league bullpen. And he's shown it in spring training. It's been really exciting to see.
I think folks should remember too that while Riley O'Brien is one of the players that is fighting for one of the back end bullpen spots, we put an inordinate amount of focus on the players that make the opening day team. And in reality, within the first few days of the season, they'll start to be roster changes. So, you know, even the guys who are number 27 or 28, you know, we're going to see a lot of them this year. So, you know, Riley O'Brien is your sleeper pick, you know, as in terms of a prospect, but he's also a sleeper that, you know, could make the major league roster. But even if he doesn't, he does have a 26 man roster, but he has a 40 man roster spot. So that means, you know, he can easily be one of these guys who, you know, toggles back and forth between Memphis and St. Louis. Thomas Ajayi, second baseman, we've seen his bat. This is the first time that people have really been able to see him. Of course, he came over from the Texas system at the beginning of August last year, started at Springfield and finished at Memphis. But this is his first camp with the Cardinals. Thomas Ajayi is an interesting guy with a bat, but with a glove, second baseman, can play a little third, can play shortstop in a pinch. But those are positions that the Cardinals are very deep in today. What have you seen from Sajacy, and what do you think we'll see from him in 2024?
Yeah, so what I've seen from Sajacy, and actually he showed it, and whenever the last game he played was, I think we're recording this Tuesday, so it was either Monday or Sunday in his game, where he didn't really, he had four at-bats and got hits in all four. Two balls were hit pretty hard, two weren't. But what he does a great job of, and he showed it in that game, is hitting the ball at ideal launch angles. He hits the ball on a line drive a lot. He hits the ball in the air a lot, and he does a really good job of pulling his fly balls, which is where they can be most effective. So I look at Tujasi as a guy who does not have the kind of elite high-end exit velocities that a lot of guys would want to see, but what he does have are actually really good 90th percentile exit velocities, which, to put it simply, means he makes a large percentage of his contact in those higher exit velocity ranges. So he might not ever hit the ball 115, 120 miles per hour, but he is consistently hitting the ball hard, and he's consistently doing it at angles that allow him to maximize his hitting.
And if I could interject too, another thing that I noticed was I looked at his batting average of balls in play, And I saw like 350, 360. I thought, well, that's not sustainable. And then I looked back his entire career. It was that way. This guy has special control with the bat that a lot of players don't do.
Yeah. And that's the thing is I think a lot of these maybe other national prospect rankings that don't have just, they don't simply don't have the capacity to watch Thomas DeJesus play a lot of baseball. They have to rely on some of the data a little bit more heavily. And it's harder to see that when you're doing that. But DeJesus, he's a really good hitter. I like him a lot as a hitter. He's shown it in spring camp. And now the question is, can he play shortstop? Because that would be huge for his ability to actually stick on the major league roster, provide value at a position where the Cardinals maybe aren't as deep as they are as at second base or third base. I'm still not sold on DeJesus' ability to play shortstop long term, but I do think he could end up as something like a Brendan Donovan. They're different players, but defensively on the defensive spectrum, I think he might be the kind of guy who can play shortstop in a pinch, not look terrible out there. Like I wouldn't feel comfortable with Thomas DeJesus starting 100 games at shortstop, but can he start 20, 30, give some guys days off? I think there's a chance he can get there.
Could he pick up corner outfield like Donovan did?
That's another great point. I would not be shocked to see the Cardinals give him some sprinklings of left field and right field action when he's in Memphis this year.
I think we're on a very good point here that, you know, with Donovan and Gorman, you know, the Cardinals are kind of blocked right now in terms of where Sejacy could go. But if they can use this year to diversify him defensively, let him continue to grow with the bat, next year, you know, maybe you don't need to bring back a Brandon Crawford or you don't, you know, you do something else where there's an opportunity for Sejacy because he's not dying on the vine. He has literally 1 month of AAA experience.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, I see him like he actually, I mean, again, different profiles, but he is similar to Brendan Donovan in the sense of he's not ever going to be an elite defender at any one position. He can play a bunch of them like moderately well, but you just want him to be able to play a bunch of different positions, not be terrible at them, and be able to get his bat into the lineup because that's really where he's going to provide a lot of his value.
Yeah. So Alec Burleson came in. And once some of these roster changes occurred, it looked like for a while he wasn't even going to have a spot in the major league roster. Now with all these injuries in the outfield, he looks like you're starting left fielder on opening day.
Yeah, Alec Burleson is an interesting one. I know there may be some fans that I've seen on Twitter and other places that are down on Alec Burleson because, quite frankly, he just wasn't good last year. Defensively, he didn't have the best year. Offensively, he struggled more than I was actually thinking he was going to. But I'm still somebody who believes in Alec Burleson's bat. He's had a good spring camp. I mean, he's shown that he can hit the ball hard and he can make a lot of contact. The swing decisions are really where there's an issue with Burleson. That's kind of the thing I'm watching for whenever I watch games is to see, is he expanding the zone? Is he swinging it like a 1-0 slider down in a way that he's not going to be able to do anything with when he can take it and live another day? Those are the kinds of swing decisions that we want to see Burleson improve so he can actually make quality contact more often because we know that he has the power to actually hit home runs and we know that he can make the contact to actually tap into that power. Now it's all just going to be about pitch selection for him.
So now let's finish up with the people's choice for center field. If Tommy Edman's not available, and that's Victor Scott, who, you know, seems to make things happen anytime he plays, and having a guy like that, that can ignite your offense, you know, wouldn't be the most terrible thing in the world. But on the other hand, we have a young man who's never played an inning of AAA baseball and probably wouldn't be with St. Louis for more than a month or 6 weeks or however long it takes for Tommy Edman to get back because he's not a talent that you're going to want to leave on your bench.
Yeah, and that's the thing is Victor Scott, for starters, has been just electric. And he's electric anytime he steps on the field. He was like this in high A, he's like this in double A. Anytime you watch Victor Scott, you're probably going to see him do something that's just really fun to watch, whether it's steal a base, make a spectacular catch, bunt for a hit, beat out an infield single, like take an extra base somewhere. Like he's just the kind of player who makes things happen, as you said earlier. And I think that's one of the key things for Victor Scott is like he just – there's just something about him where it just he's, every time he gets on first base, he scores basically in spring training. He does a really good job of bunting his way on the bases, which is actually something that helps him neutralize the left on left platoon splits that a lot of hitters suffer from because whenever a lefty comes up to bat, he'll just slap a bunt by him and take first base. We'll see how sustainable that is when they start just bringing the third baseman then all the way up to the pitcher's mound to cut that off in the majors. But like he's a smart player. He's a talented player. He's a super athletic player. I'm really excited to see him continue on the trajectory that he's on. I think if I had to choose a center fielder or what to do with Scott, it's not going to be to start him in the majors. I would rather let him develop at a natural rate instead of getting thrown into the majors where I'm not sure his bat's going to translate as well as it has in spring training. I think he doesn't impact the ball just hard enough generally on average. The swing decisions are questionable. I think that's something that major league pitchers in a regular season are going to exploit. But it's hard to deny the electricity of his game, the defensive ability that he brings. He's a super exciting player, and we're going to probably see him sooner rather than later.
And, you know, what the Cardinals may do is start Dylan Carlson in center and maybe Michael Ciani, who's also having a nice spring. You have Michael Ciani be your defensive replacement late in the game, backup center fielder. And again, a lot's going to depend on how long Tommy Edman's is going to be out. And, you know, it's still a rather vague area in terms of when he's going to be cleared to swing and how much time he's going to take to, you know, get ramped up. So that'll be something we'll continue to watch in the final 2 weeks of spring training. So with that, we will close the March 13th edition of Wednesdays with Walton and Newberry. We hope you stop by the Cardinal Nation, and you'll see some number of articles have a gold key. That means they're for subscribers only. And for $79.95 a year, you can unlock those keys, see everything that Blake and I and a talented other group of staffers provide, including our in-season minor league reporters in all the affiliate cities that will be getting started in just a few weeks. Memphis opening day is just around the corner on the 29th of March. So with that, we will say goodbye for this week and see you next time.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.